community in Vancouver is quite tight-knit in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure we have mutual friends in, like, the arts community that we don't even know about. just off of just being in Vancouver and in these venues, in these spaces, it really does feel very communal. And I think there is kind of, like, you know, when you bring up, like, the fact of venues closing down and maybe there not being enough city supports and stuff like that, it's awful, and obviously you wouldn't want that to be the case, but I think it, like, does help bring people together at the same time. It's kind of like a silver lining, not necessarily, like, it's good that these venues are closing, you know, but just that
people
are banding together as a result.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this hardship, it has forged a lot of bonds and fire, I think. And, you know, to your point about the community being very tight-knit, one of the things that is so inspiring to me and so exciting when I organize disorder shows is going to, like, poetry events or going to comedy events or going to drag events and talking to people about, you know, what they do and what spaces that they go into and finding out, oh, you actually know this other person who, or if I invite them to, you know, to come perform together, and then all of a sudden there's these people coming in that are used to coming to comedy shows or used to coming to poetry shows. Mm-hmm. And it turns out, oh, actually, we, like, there's a lot of us that already know each other. And then at the same time, when you go to something where you don't know anyone, but everyone there is queer, I mean, because, you know, the shows that I like to go to usually are queer-focused, it is a reminder of, like, how big the community is and how many people there are. It happens every so often that I'll go to something where I'm like, I want to just try something new. I started going to poetry nights at Gina's, which is this great, like, sapphic Mexican restaurant and also arts venue on, I think it's on Pender.
In Chinatown, right?
Yeah. Which is, as an aside, that's how I met Blair, a.k.a. DJ Dyke Tiger, because they host queer poetry open mic once a month. But when I went there and I was like, I'm surrounded by all of these dykes that I've never met before. How are there so many of us in Vancouver? How did I not have, like, a single... So while I'm sure that a lot of us had, like, mutual friends, it's just a reminder of how big the ocean is.
Mm.
And so when you, for example, tap into a vein of that desire for space and creativity, like Ivan did when starting Venue Co-op, sometimes you can be blown away by just how much pressure there is built up and how much it's ready to escape and unleash and make things happen.
Totally. And on that note, I think part of the magic is, like, the interdisciplinariness of it, like the different kinds of artists and non-artists, like just people with different skills, like photographers, videographers, musicians, visual artists, creating a space where different people can come together and, like, collaborate on things and see that solidarity that we all face. Because it can be, like, I do think at once we have a big, beautiful music scene and art scene, but it is kind of segregated or has been. And I think creating more opportunities for overlap and cross-connection between these things is the way to go. Like, we need spaces that can support all of us, all of our arts. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the way you mentioned it, it's not necessarily like you're creating something out of nothing. You're, like, opening the floodgates of people that really, really want to be a part of this community where they can not only listen to and go to these cool concerts, but also contribute, whether that's through, like, video or photography. And yeah, in a way that is very interdisciplinary. I think the interdisciplinariness of, like, disorder in particular is something that I always thought was really cool, because I felt like certain arts, you know, like comedy, for example, is always something to me that felt like very siloed in its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, oh, you know, like comedians, it's an open mic night or it's like a comedy night and that is it. But being able to, like, have it be interspersed between these bands and all these other different kinds of performances, I think maybe, like, can help people open up to live comedy in a way that maybe they wouldn't have been able to before. Because I think, like, for some people, the idea of going to a live comedy show, like, there are, like, these preconceived notions, because a lot of, at least in my life, a lot of the, like, live comedy that, like, you see online is so, lame?
Bad.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
For lack of a better term.
It seems like we have similar experiences. Mm-hmm.
It's so funny that you mentioned that, because I do think sometimes when I talk about these different disciplines that I'm interested in, it comes up in conversation that people's first exposure to something was like, or something that comes to mind is like when you think of spoken word art, mm-hmm. sometimes people think of bad spoken word art, mm. or you think of comedy, you think of bad comedy. Something that I love about Vancouver is that that is such a breeding ground for people to cut their teeth and get good and get experienced at these things, and to continue to like hone their craft. And I really love the punk mindset of just breaking down barriers to entry and breaking down all of these like kind of unspoken rules to particular spaces and particular scenes, essentially making it as welcoming as possible to people to try new things and to experiment and to not feel this fear of what's going to happen if I do, whether that's an audience member who's like, I'm afraid of going to this show that I've never gone to before because I don't know if I'm going to feel comfortable, and then going and being like, oh wow, that was actually awesome and I want to do it again, or whether it's an artist who, so many times when I've gone to an open mic and like particularly comedy open mics, and every now and then someone will very shyly be like, is it okay if I like sing a song? And it's like, yeah, buddy, sing your song. We want to hear it.
Yeah.
So I love bringing those things together. And also one of the magical things about doing these disorder shows is that because everyone is a little bit of a fish out of water, which means everyone is on an equal playing field, and there's suddenly we're all in this together, and that feels very unifying. Where it's also part of the reason I love to continue to have artists who haven't done disorder before on there, because again, it's like a, well, I, you know, we're just throwing ourselves in and seeing what happens. But there's a sense that it's been going long enough that those of us who've been involved in it for a long time, I mean, you know, mostly myself because I'm the one who does it, but
all 11 of them.
That there's a sense of like, this is going to go well. It's just going to be different from anything you've seen before, anything you've done before. So, you know, comedians are putting their faith into poets, who are putting their faith into punk bands, who are putting their faith into clowns. Why not?
Why not? Absolutely. Speaking of the clowning part in particular, I did want to get into that a little bit, because yeah. I think clowning is frankly underrated.
So underrated.
Like not just from like a performance standpoint, but I feel like from like a philosophical standpoint, you know, where
the
it's
cultural.
Like the a culture, mm. yeah, exactly, or like a mindset kind of thing, where I feel like when you see clowning or just like the sort of like ethos around it, it's like an opportunity to be a level of silliness and sort of wackiness and performance that you like wouldn't do outside of, or like that most people wouldn't do unless they were like with the people that they're maybe closest with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like really cool presenting that in a way like where it is a performance, but you're really getting to like the deepest, silliest part of someone, it feels like.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that silliness as a wedge to kind of push you apart from the stagnation of your, you know, waking daily life and into a world where suddenly things feel a little bit more possible, a little more dreamlike. And to get philosophical for a second, if I may, I was having a really interesting conversation about this with a mutual friend of mine in Ivan's, Johnum, who also performs as Icy Gaze, who is a clown. And I had been reading, as part of research for my art, I had been reading the English translation of Rites de Passage, which is the book where the term rite of passage comes from. And it's talking about what ritual is. And one of the main things that defines a ritual is the idea that one social role for yourself is coming to an end and a new one is about to begin. But in the middle, there needs to be a transitional period where you essentially don't have a social role, which gives you the space and time to be creative, be flexible, be emotional, essentially to be like hot magma before you cool back into whatever your new version is going to be. And I was talking about this with Johnum because I felt like there's something about clowning that feels like this, you know, mini ritual where for a little bit you are going outside of yourself, outside of your social role, outside of your literal identity and becoming something new. And in doing so, inviting everyone else to take just this little baby step outside of themselves into something that's a little sillier, it's a little goofier. And it just makes you, you know, a bit more, I think, agreeable to whatever the clown is putting on. There's happy clowns, sad clowns, sexy clowns, sexy clowns. Did I say sexy clowns?
Yeah, I mean, those are only the good kind of clowns. There's a lot of bad kind of clowns too, but we won't get into that.
Well, I did think it was funny you mentioned that because I do think a lot of people have this perception of like they've maybe, you know, like a terrible clown that goes to like a kid's birthday party or whatever.
Yeah. Or, you know, all the horror movie clowns. They've got some bad PR.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. I wonder why clowns became associated with like children's birthdays, because I feel like adults can appreciate clowning more.
I want clowns at my adult birthday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think if I hadn't been traumatized by clowns as a child, I would... Well, I mean, now I like clowning because it's cool to watch. It's like really creative stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And what you were saying earlier, Danny, like it's philosophical in a way. It's like creates a point of critique or a opportunity for like a different perspective, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, like I think... just like that type of performance is like something that is feels so even like it's weird because like, you know, you're wearing this kind of like, you know, assuming that you have some kind of costume on or whatever, but it does feel like so vulnerable at the same time, which I think is really cool.
And yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost like the clown paint, the grease paint that you put on your face. Maybe that's your real skin.
Mm.
Sounds like you've done some clowning.
No, I have not. Maybe I have, like, in an informal way, and I didn't even realize it. Ooh. But
sounds like maybe you should do some clowning.
Maybe I should look into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're live on air right now, so, you know, if anyone listening does clowning, hit me up.
Well, I can get you in touch with Nico. He runs, or is part of running, I'm not 100% sure about the hierarchy there, but Fool's Errand Productions, and they do a lot of incredible clown shows. I've gotten to see a couple of them, which is, you know, how I got to know Nico. So there's always opportunities to learn about and to do clowning classes, and if anyone feels like they've got just a silly little guy in somewhere inside that you want to let out... If you want to have like you want to have a little red nose or big red nose,
wow!
Nothing stopping
you. I'm inspired.
One that honks, even, you know, who knows? Okay. What? Another question I had for both of you was, you know, you're the executive director of Venue Co-op. You, I guess, are the executive director of Disorder.
I like to say the curator of Collective Disorder, yeah.
Okay.
But that's just because when you're an adult, you can sometimes pick your own job title, mm-hmm. and it feels great.
Mm.
I picked mine.
Mm-hmm. Everything is made up.
Yeah, yes. For real. But like also, you're part of Doom Loops,
yeah.
Beastie. You are clearly on the board of not just, I think, Redgate, but also Venue Co-op, correct?
I'm not on the board of Redgate, but I am on the board of Venue Co-op. Yeah. I did work at Redgate some time ago, and so still have, you know, have my connections there. And I got married at Redgate as well. So.
Oh, okay.
Everything happens at Redgate.
It seems like it, yeah.
We love Redgate, but also we need more venues like Redgate.
Yeah.
Just to, you know, like, disperse all our emotions and feelings and experiences.
For sure. Where do you two find the time? It feels like you're both
question.
Just constantly so big. I mean, and I don't mean this in like a...
I feel personally attacked.
Yeah. I guess more so just for the audience, you know, like this could be like an inspiring thing. Like, what drives you to be so involved in so many different things and kind of like have your hand in so many different, not just venues, but also like artistic mediums and things like that?
Well, for me, everything's connected. Like, Venue Co-op started because I was playing in bands and because I was like having this question about like, you know, needing more venue space and stuff. So it's mutually beneficial, to me to run Venue Co-op, create these opportunities. My band's played a few events. I've played solo stuff and gotten to try out different things. Like, I tried out DJing and was like, now I'm into DJing. Hell yeah. So yeah, for me, they're all really tied together. And also, it's gotten so much easier and better because there's a team now, and there's a board of which Autumn's on, and mm-hmm. our board has 9 members who are all incredible and very dedicated artists and organizers in the city. So having people thinking about some aspects has really freed up my time to focus on what I'm good at, which is execution. I'm good at like running the show. I'm good at figuring out the logistics. I'm good at partnerships, sponsorships, like promo and stuff like that. So it's really important to just share the work. And now it's even like the team has grown so much. There's people like creating all these elements that I'm not even aware of. And then they're just like updating me on all the cool shit they've done. And I'm like, whoa, this is awesome. This is the power of a cooperative, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the ship runs itself. It's awesome.
Yeah. Something that it made me think of is, have either of you seen the show The Pit, the medical drama?
Yes, I'm fully caught up.
Yeah, there's a scene, I think it's in season 1, where, you know, they're ER doctors, and one of them's like, why do we do this again? And then the other one's like, well, because we all have ADHD and anything else would be boring. And
yes.
It made me, as an artist, feel seen by an actor playing an ER doctor. Because I do think, you know, I have really tried to sit down and make myself just do one thing, but that thing keeps changing. You know, for a while it was painting, and then drawing, and then bookmaking, and then poetry, and then performance art. And you know, I am constantly finding inspiration in new areas in a way that it, you know, it has pros and cons. If you sit and you do one thing every day for the rest of your life, you may be the best person to ever do that. And that's, you know, that's something that's incomparable. But at the same time, if you take inspiration from all of these different places, there's always something new to discover around the corner. And I honestly, like, I can't help myself. I want to find out what is going on around that corner. What's being made? What can it make me feel as an audience member? And then how can I, you know, I want to like do it. That's why I started doing comedy. That's why I started doing poetry, because I'll go to these events. I mean, I had been doing poetry, you know, for a long time, but to get kind of getting back into poetry and getting back into spoken word, because I go to these events and I'm like, damn, this is so awesome. And I really want to do it. So, you know, I think if there's anyone listening who could possibly be inspired by what Ivan or I are doing, what I would say is it is a lot of time investment, and it is just there's a lot of work that you may end up doing that you're not going to get paid for. So it, on one hand, it may not be that dream thing of like suddenly overnight you become rich and famous and get to just do your passion every day for the rest of your life with no problems. But at the same time, when you go out to spaces and you meet other artists, other creatives, you get to learn from them, you get to make new friends, find new loves, to be on stage or to be in the audience, I find all of these things that's the electrical current that runs through the community, and it's real. And there's nothing that compares to that. So for as busy as I am, you know, working 2 jobs and doing all of this stuff, and, you know, it is important to take a break and to take care of yourself, but I get so much life from doing all of these different things, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, I think the other day we were basically just like bonding over how tired we both are. Yeah. Like, we're just to be clear, we're exhausted. This is very tiring.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
But also, yeah, like the reality of sustaining an arts career involves probably having another job. Like, I'm in a PhD. So it's a lot of things to juggle, but you know, one day we'll all be able to pay each other as artists, and that's the future I'm fighting for.
And I gotta say, we've made a lot of great progress on it. I mean, thinking about how well the artists have been paid at venue co-op events.
Yeah, totally.
And which is part of why I had wanted to do this collaboration for Disorder 11 with venue co-op, because in the past, Disorder, it's always been like a split of ticket profits between all the artists. And this time I wanted to try to get some funding for the event to try to guarantee, like, we don't have to worry about ticket sales, although I feel pretty confident they're going to be pretty good, but we don't even have to worry about that because it's the pay is guaranteed. Mm-hmm. And the co-op, venue co-op, is so self-sustaining now. There's so much engagement and so many monthly memberships that people have put in that the capacity is there to not just have all of this art being made, but also for people to be paid well for their time.
Yeah.
So while the venue itself doesn't exist yet, and we're not, it's not like we're doing this 24/7, 365, but we're getting there. We've made an incredible amount of progress and so much proof of concept that...
The concept is proved.
Yeah, it's so proved.
Now we just need the venue.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
The bagel is coming soon.
The bagel. Mm-hmm. I forgot that this was your idea, Autumn, the title Everything But the Bagel.
I was hoping you were going to mention that, yeah. So I didn't sound self-aggrandizing.
That is huge.
Well, there's
this seasoning you can buy from Trader Joe's called
yes.
Everything But the Bagel.
I actually was in New York semi-recently, and I brought back two jars of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's nice. So yummy. But when we were talking about doing last year, early in Venue Co-op's gestation cycle, when we were talking about doing this big event for the first time, and it just made me think of, we've got all the ingredients for an incredible venue. This is all of the stuff we want to be putting on. We just don't have the venue. It's everything but the bagel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, I've definitely had the thought of eventually naming the venue the bagel just to, like, close that loop. But we would have to bring it to a vote.
I mean, but that's a thing that we can do.
It's true. We're very democratic. Everything is voted on mm-hmm. democratically.
Mm. And when you think about it, like a mosh pit, that's basically like a bagel.
It's true.
No way.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Crazy inception. There's so many layers.
A lot to think about here.
And,
yeah.
And all of the jewelry that people lose and all the change that comes falling out of their pockets when they're moshing, that's that you have to pick it up at the end of the night. That's mm-hmm. the seasoning.
That's the seasoning. Mm-hmm. And the sweat that just like lives in the floor forever.
And stale beer. Yeah. Delicious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well seasoned. That's what we hope for. We want well-seasoned venues. We don't want venues to only live for like 1 year, you know?
Yeah.
And get torn down or shut down or whatever.
Sometimes the floors are too clean and you don't want that.
Give me a dirty floor. Give me graffiti in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. But like clean.
I want the
also.
Yeah, a clean bathroom, but the walls are just shellacked with years of graffiti.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the ideal, I think.
Mm-hmm.
We are reaching the end of this hour, but, you know, I guess if you have sort of like a plug pitch for this Disorder 11 XI event that's happening, if we just want to maybe like run through it one more time, who's performing, when it's happening, where it's happening.
Do I ever? Yeah, absolutely. So coming up on Friday, July 31st, Collective Disorder and Venue Co-op are bringing you Disorder 11. A queer variety show with punk rock, drag, theater, and a late night DJ, starring Sundress, Slow Aside, DJ Dyke Tiger, Sassafras, Nico Pante, Cairns, Morgan Sidke, and hosted by Anna Kay. We've got a little bit of everything for everyone. It's happening at Redgate Art Society. Tickets are $20 or pay what you can. Doors at 7. Show starts at 8 and is going to run late.
Gonna run late, that means like anywhere from like 12 to even like 4 a.m.
And it could be happening next year still. I don't know. It could reach a point of critical mass where people don't leave.
It could be
its own 24-hour event even.
Mm-hmm. Well, it could be happening all the way up until Everything But the Bagel 2.
Everything But the Bagel
which,
2.
Which is happening on August 22nd, also at Redgate, and beyond. That we've actually teamed up with other venues in the area and non-venues, just like spaces. So we're doing like a multi-venue all-day festival. Not 24 hours, 12 hours, but it'll be really fun. So come to Disorder and then come to Everything But the Bagel too.
Just live at Redgate for a few weeks and you'll get to experience both things.
That sounds like a lot. That sounds like a great idea. I mean, there's so many good food options in that area too, you know? Yeah. Like, it wouldn't even be an issue.
It's summertime. Yeah. Yeah. Bounce around, have some fun, check out the city.
All right, well, thank you so much, Ivan, and thank you so much, Autumn, for coming in today to speak about Venue Co-op and Collector Disorder. Once again, Disorder 11, Disorder XI, happening July 31st at Redgate Art Society, doors at 7 p.m. Make sure you check it out. It's going to be a great time. This has been your host, Danny, for the hour. This is Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. We're going to end off with a track from a favorite here at the station, the Golden Age of Wrestling.
Oh, yeah!
Brontosaurus.
Oh, see? We love Jeff.
They're so cool. They're so cool.
Let's go.
Hell yeah. Thank you, Danny.